Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, the listener. Thanks to all of you, including Vince Power, Chris Benito, Steve Iadarola, and new patrons, two of them, one named Peter and the other named Peter. All the Peters, welcome to the show.
Hey, Peters, welcome.
On this episode of DTNS, Google's got lots of AI news out of its cloud conference. Ron Richards from Android Faithful is here to help us understand the launch of Find My Device on Android. Join us. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024, in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Animal House, I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us, CEO and co-founder of Scorbit and host of Android Faithful, Ron Richards. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back on a beautiful day here in New York. It's 70 degrees out. Spring has sprung, and I can't wait to be inside to talk technology with you guys.
This must be what happens after an eclipse. Everybody gets wonderful weather because it's like 70-something degrees here, too.
It is. We've had nothing but torrential rain for like 6 months here in the New York tri-state area. And then the one day it's 70 degrees, I said to my wife, I'm like, oh, I can't play with the kids because I have to podcast with Tom and Sarah and Roger. So it's
well, thank you for picking us over your family and sunshine and
priorities. Yeah.
All right, let's start with the quick hits.
Nikkei reports that Microsoft is investing $2.9 billion in data centers in Japan by 2025, set to be formally announced during Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida's visit to Washington, D.C. this week. Microsoft plans to install advanced AI chips at two existing sites in eastern and western Japan. It will also unveil an AI-related reskilling program in Japan to train 3 million workers over 3 years and set up a research lab on robotics and AI.
In other moving chip production and research around the world news, yesterday we passed along TSMC getting some CHIPS Act money to expand manufacturing in Arizona. And Reuters says that the CHIPS Act is going to send $6.6 billion Samsung's way next week, which would be used to expand chip output and subsidize construction at four new Taylor, Texas facilities near Austin, Texas, as well as one other undisclosed location.
Ooh, where could it be?
Fancy.
Yeah. A Wall Street Journal investigation found that Russian and Sudanese paramilitary groups are buying Starlink satellite internet equipment through third parties. The third parties get the equipment used either through legitimate sites like eBay or other means where it is legal to obtain it. And they resell it to the paramilitary groups, where volunteers then sometimes smuggle the hardware to its new location. Ukraine is working with SpaceX to stop unauthorized users from accessing Starlink in that country. New rules will soon prohibit equipment from accessing Starlink there unless registered, but it is unclear how effective that's going to be. Hasn't started yet. For its part, Sudan says SpaceX is not working with it to stop unauthorized access in Sudan itself.
Automattic, the company behind WordPress.com, Tumblr, Pocket Cast, Simple Note, has purchased Beeper, the company that briefly tried to bring Apple Messenger access to Android users. Beeper's 27 employees will join Automattic, and that includes Beeper CEO and co-founder Eric Majakovsky, who will become Automattic's head of messaging, overseeing not only Beeper, but also a similar service that Automattic already owned called Texts.com.
At its Vision 2024 event today, Intel shared details on its Gaudi 3 AI processors, which it says have 1.7 times the training performance, 50% better inference, and 40% better efficiency than NVIDIA's H100 processors, all with a cheaper price. Ooh, shots fired. Intel also announced new branding for its data center CPU portfolio. The Granite Rapids and Sierra Forest chips are now branded as the Xeon 6 family, expected this year. Intel also announced development for an AI NIC ASIC for Ultra Ethernet Consortium compliant networking and an AI NIC chiplet that will be used in future XPU and Gaudi 3 processors, which will also be available to external customers through Intel Foundry.
Hey, you know, when it takes 2 years for your competitor NVIDIA to ship a GPU because they're in such high demand, you might as well make some. So smart move, yeah. Intel. All right, a lot of news coming out of Google's Next conference in Las Vegas. Google announced a few details about a custom-built ARM processor for cloud computing called Axion. It is being made for Google by Broadcom, if you're curious. It's based on ARM's Neoverse 2 designs, and Google says it delivers 30% better performance over what they use for AWS and Azure on their native ARM processors, as well as 50% better performance and 60% better energy efficiency than competitive x86 processors. Axion chips will be available for Google Cloud customers to take advantage of later this year. Snap is apparently one of the companies who's going to take advantage. Cloud resources powered by Axion chips will power Snap. Google is using Axion chips in services powering YouTube ads and the Google Earth Engine already, as well as a few other Google services. And Google did say it will continue to offer NVIDIA chips, including a few of the brand new Blackwell chips as well. Ron, I know you don't really follow the cloud processor market as closely, but you know it does make sense to for Google to be in this game since AWS and Microsoft's Azure and everybody's doing it, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the obviously the chip arms race just continue, you know, with the crazy success NVIDIA's had and all that sort of stuff. And we see, like, we've already seen in the mobile devices with the Tensor chips, you know, like Google is taking it upon themselves to be the change they want and not be so dependent on other manufacturers like Blackwell or NVIDIA. So they're really kind of just, you know, continuing their main strategy of kind of controlling their own destiny. And, you know, I always wondered what Google Earth was running on. And there it is. It's running on Axiom. So there it is.
Something that a lot of people are keeping an eye on is Google's Gemini. Gemini's latest version, 1.5 Pro, is available in public preview on Google's AI app building platform, Vertex AI. It can handle 1 million tokens, which means about 70,000 words, 30,000 lines of code, an hour of video, or 11 hours of audio all at once. If you're keeping count, it's 4 times as high as Claude 3 and 8 times as high as GPT-4 Turbo Max. It can compare and analyze content in TV shows, conference calls, recordings, and the like across multiple languages, and also make transcripts of audio and even audio from video. Gemini 1.5 will power new features in Google's Code Assist, letting you update cross-file dependencies and review large chunks of code all at once.
And this is just like the Gemini stuff I've been following along because, like, we all know that, like, if like a year ago it felt like Google was scrambling to keep up with OpenAI and like what was going on in the AI space, and then Gemini rolled. I keep saying Gemini like the Apollo mission, right? The Gemini mission, like a NASA tech from in Texas in 1965.
Sure.
No, but the thing when Gemini came out was that we said keep an eye on what Google does with this stuff because OpenAI is cool and ChatGPT is cool and Sora is neat, but Google has the applications to apply this technology against it and really turbocharge what you can do with it. And that's what I've been keeping an eye on is how they apply Gemini. And then the fact that Gemini rolls out and on the heels of it, after 1.0, 1.5 is arriving so quickly. They are iterating so fast, and it's almost, you know, it's really hard to keep up, in fact. But that's the idea, is that they want, you know, to have Gemini be able to handle a large, massive amount of input and be able to be a tool. And I got to admit, the Code Assist stuff is just game changer for programmers. I don't know if any of you had a chance to play with it, but, like, the integration with Gemini into Android Developer Studio or other stuff like that, it makes coding, like, it takes away the menial tasks in coding and let the AI mm-hmm. do it so that you can be more creative in what you're developing. And so yeah. It really, really is changing things very fast.
I was talking to a scripter about this exact thing over the weekend, and he was showing me like, look, this is my crappy yep. code, and this is what it can do. Like,
oh, we 100% use it for the Scorbit, my company. We have a mobile app, and we use it to, like, you know, what's wrong with this block of code, and it comes back with like three things that are wrong. Here's how you can fix it. And it's like working with a developer who doesn't get annoyed by you asking dumb questions.
Does the developer get anything wrong code wise? Have you been like,
I haven't noticed it. Personally, I haven't noticed it yet. We haven't had any hallucinations yet where all of a sudden it renders like a different thing. But you're always on the lookout for that too, because that's the concern, is that, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right?
Yeah. And it will get things wrong. That was another thing the developer I was talking about is like, yeah, occasionally it's like, oh, that's not right. But he's like, I review everything just to make sure. So, I think the upshot of this is we're in the arms race now, right? Yep. Claude 3 just came out and was like, we're so much better than GPT-4 Turbo Max. And then Gemini 1.5 Pro comes out like, guess what? We're even better than Claude 3. And you know, GPT 4.5 is going to come or something pretty soon. And that's the way it's going to go. They all have code assist. They're all really good at it. Copilot is great at it. Yep. So yeah, this is now we're off to the races. Now we're off to the benchmark.
The lawsuits begin.
Exactly. Google's text to image model, Imagen, I guess is how they want us to say it. Imagen 2 got some updates as well, adding the ability to add and remove elements from images with painting and out painting. This is something Dolly and others have had, so it's kind of catching up here. Also, the Synth ID watermark feature is now available for all images you create with Image Edge, and text to live video will let you create 4 seconds of video from a text prompt. So it's, you know, no open AI.
It's an animated GIF.
A lot of money has been spent to make that animated GIF. I was at an event at Google here in New York last November, and they actually had one of the lead project managers working on Imagen. And this is back in November before any of the text to image stuff was actually public, and kind of gave a sneak preview. And he showed the kind of iteration they've gone in their development of what their text to speech development has been, and then gave the first, I think I was lucky enough to be at one of the first public glimpses of the video generation aspect. And I mean, and again, akin to what's, you know, with OpenAI and Sora, this stuff is mind blowing, right? Yeah. It's just the applications are crazy. But what I do think is like, I'm waiting to see the artists and the movie directors who use these tools to do the next thing, because the challenge is that at 4 seconds of video with the same prompt, you never get the same thing every time, so you can't tell a linear story yet, right? Like, you could say, you know, give me a New York City apartment, and you'll get a different one every time. So, like, in order to use this from a creative standpoint, there's still a lot of development that's got to happen, but it's mind-blowing to see it in work.
And if you want to try Imagen 2, it's available in Vertex AI as well.
Yeah. We also have Google Vids, which lets you create visual presentations from text prompts. So you collect your assets from something like Google Drive, assemble them in order, then you can add a voiceover, even a video of yourself, and then edit that into a final video. Now, you can do this all manually, but you can also let Gemini make a draft of the video for you. It can also make storyboards, it can at least attempt to write scripts, and use text-to-speech to narrate those scripts. Google will launch Vids in public beta in June in Workspace Labs, although some Workspace customers have been testing it for things like training videos, HR announcements, and even meeting recaps.
I saw this at that same demo back in November, and as someone who has built lots of presentations and decks and things like that, the idea of making this work go faster was greatly appreciated, and I think that this has the potential to really, like, not only impact programmers and things like that, but also like marketing folks and people on the business side. And it all goes back to last year at Google I.O., Jason Howell and Huinto Dao and myself, back when we were at All About Android, interviewed Dave Burke from the Android team over Google. And again, it's the AI, value proposition, which is, made the comparison to laundry. We're like, in the 1890s, you spent a week doing laundry, and then the washing machine got invented, and now it takes 3 hours or 2 hours or whatever it is. And it gives you more time with these tools to be more creative in what you're making, as long as the interfaces are manageable for the everyday user. And that's what we're seeing this evolution evolution go through. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, so. I saw a lot of headlines were like, Google's vid isn't for Hollywood, it's for HR. And I'm like, right. Okay, not every video has to like threaten the workers. Like, I guess this might threaten some workers, but threaten them with training videos that are made faster by your HR department.
Threaten them with, you know, with that presentation that boredom. They didn't want to build manually. Yeah.
So many decks in my life. So many.
Yeah.
Actually, now that I'm saying this out loud, I'm like, oh no, this is going to be more decks. This is going to be more. but hopefully it'll be used for good. Google Workspace subscribers will soon be able to use voice prompts to kick off the AI-based Help Me Write feature in Gmail instead of having to type it out. Company also launching a feature in Gmail for Workspace that will instantly turn rough drafts into more polished email. So you could say like, hey, I knocked this out here. Make it work better. And paying subscribers will be the first to get access to these new features before Google considers rolling them out to everybody.
Should I be ashamed to admit that I use Help Me Write in Gmail?
No, like, why?
I mean, it's a feature.
It's
that
so cool.
They want people to use.
Yeah,
I've not used that. Do you think it works as advertised?
Yeah, I mean, what I found in my life is I'm a much better editor than writer. Right. So I could very much easily say respond to this email with enthusiasm and blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. And it'll come back with it. And I'm like, OK, great. I can make some nips and tucks to make it in my own voice and then send. It has saved me time. So because typing just takes so long.
I know it's so hard. It's so hard to type. But I mean, you know, sometimes it is time consuming. I wonder how much. We will be talking, you know, in not the too distant future of like, yeah, Ron responded to me, seemed like 30% human, you know, or like I think he put a lot of like Ron into that, like more like 70% human today.
My favorite was when this first came out, I immediately said, write a email to my wife about how much I love her, et cetera. And I just took what it gave and hit send. And we were both in this house, and she came from her office over to mine, and she's like, "That was so sweet." Oh, and I just looked at her. I just looked at her, and she's like, "That was AI, wasn't it?" I was like, "Yep."
Yeah. So. Gotta love it.
Yep.
Gotta love it. We also have Vertex AI Agent Builder, which lets companies quickly build customer service chatbots. The agents are tied into Google Search to ground them and reduce those unhelpful hallucinations, like telling you love your wife.
Right.
Or telling you that you can get a refund on your airline ticket.
I was just going to say, did you see that airline story? That was crazy. Yeah, where the chatbot was like, no, you're totally right. You should get a full refund.
Yeah, you get a bereavement fare refund. No problem. Yeah. This is also table stakes, right? Like having the ability for companies to create their own, spin up their own customer service chatbots is just what everybody is offering these days.
Well, we talked a lot about Google just now, but what about Apple? Apple, a lot of power users. Sometimes hipster users, I don't know, the rest of the world is like, ugh, Apple. You know what? Apple has a lot of news. Every week, Eileen Rivera and I host Apple Vision Show. We're 10 episodes in now to talk about Apple's vision compared to what we as consumers all want and what we can all get out of Apple products. Get subscribed now at applevisionshow.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamline my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Google's Find My Device network for Android finally launched on Monday. It uses a network similar to the one that Apple uses, using some Bluetooth to let Android users crowdsource finding missing devices without compromising your security or privacy. Features include locating an Android phone by using other Android devices to approximate its location. If you've got a Nest home device, it can tell you how close it is to that. If the missing device is close enough to the Find My Device app, it can give you some visual clues. If you've got the Pixel 8, your Pixel 8 doesn't even have to have battery. It can be powered off, and this still works.
Which is magic.
Starting in May, the network will support new Chipolo and Pebble B Bluetooth tracker tags and compatible tags from Motorola, Geo, and Eufy later this year. Users will also be able to share access to the tags with multiple users. All right, Ron, I know you've been kind of excited for this feature to come out. So what do you think? What are your initial thoughts?
In all fairness, I haven't been as excited as my co-host on Android Faithful, Michelle Rahman, who's been you know how on the podcast you have several drinking games emerge and stuff like that? It was every time Michelle mentions the Find My Device network these past couple of months was one of our drinking items. It's just something that we know has been coming for a while. Google announced it a while ago. We knew they were working on it, and we knew that they were also working on it in collaboration with Apple. And the idea was that they were creating a shared spec across this type of Find My Device network, because this will work. I mean, this is mainly like the, I don't know, what do they call it on iOS or the Apple with the Apple tags?
Find My.
Find My, right?
Yeah. This used to be Find My Friends, Find My Device. Now it's just Find My.
Exactly. And so this is the equivalent of that for the Android platform, but this also works if you have an iOS phone, if you happen to be an Apple, you know, Apple user iOS phone, but you're using, you know, Google products, or if you get the Chipolo or Pebble Bee or whatever, the app will still work on iOS. So there was an interoperability that was happening there. And then also Google and Apple agreed to work on a spec to have both platforms share the unwanted tracking protocol to avoid from any, you know, kind of any nefarious stuff happening on. So Google's been ready. Google's been champing at the bit to get this out. Apple, not so much. Apple has failed to meet their deadlines or do what was previously agreed upon when it comes to the unwanted tracking protocol. And so since last fall, we've kind of been like, we know this is coming. What's going on? When is it happening? When is it going to roll out? And then much to our surprise, indicators started coming out of Google via emails and kind of messaging to direct users that this might be coming very soon. And then sure enough, yesterday, the news hit that it is rolling out. And it seems as if Google just, you know, got tired of waiting for Apple and just move forward, which bravo to them. Don't get hamstrung. I have no idea what Apple's motivations were in not doing their portion of it. It'd be nice if everything all worked together, but that's kind of, you know, it'd be nice if a lot of things worked together as Beeper proved to us.
It might be motivations. It might be technical difficulty. It may, sure. in which case, that's another reason Apple wouldn't want to talk about it, because they don't want to admit it's a technical difficulty they can't overcome.
Right. And it could be priorities. I mean, Apple's a very busy company. They've got a lot of stuff going on. If they don't see the value of getting this stuff done or not. So I'm glad that Google has decided not to just basically sit around and be waiting, because, you know, as you know, Sarah mentioned, Motorola, Eufy, Chipolo, Pebble Bee, these partners are ready to roll out product, and all the stuff, especially with Android 15, you know, we're gonna, you know, Android 15 in full developer preview, you know, the train is leaving the station on the next wave of how Android works, and this is a big part of it, right? The fact that you can this whole system works even if your phone is if your phone battery dies and you lose it, you can still find it with this network, which is crazy, right? I don't know if the battery dies or not, but if the phone is off, it will work. But the big important thing with it though is that when you're using your phone, phone, you do need to leave Bluetooth on, as Bluetooth is what is kind of powering the network of devices and everybody talking to each other. And so that's one aspect. If you are an Android user, you want to make sure you always have Bluetooth on if you're using the Find My Device network. But hey, for me, who's somebody, you know, we've all lost our keys, our wallets or whatever, putting in the use case. Apple has proven the use case with the Apple tags, and we saw the use case already with like Tile and some of the other ones, Tracker and things like that back in the day. The idea of these low power Bluetooth networks that allow you to locate a physical device are great. To see it implemented at the OS level really just makes Android, you know, it's another piece of the puzzle for Android to be that much more robust and that much more competitive with iOS. So.
Totally. Yeah. And especially if you have multiple devices that are, you know, in various ecosystems. I mean, I'm pretty much iOS only, or you know, Mac, Apple OS, you know, in my house, all the things, you know, but, and you might say like, how often do you lose your phone, Sarah? And I'm like, a lot. You know, I use my Apple Watch to be like, ping, ping, ping. Where's the sound coming from? Oh, there it is between the couch cushions. But I've also had, you know, freak out moments where I'm like, where is my MacBook? Or, you know, where's my phone? Where's, you know, a variety of things. And Find My is an absolute godsend. Even if I look and go, okay, so my phone's dead and it's at my friend's house. At least I know where it is. Yep. Okay. We'll worry about that later. At least I know. So this is a you know, a great, great, great option for folks who are in the Google ecosystem.
Yeah, and if anything, it's funny because I've used Find My on the Mac side of things because, believe it or not, my aforementioned wife, she's on an iPhone, right? We're a split household here. And, you know, one day she lost her phone and it's the kind of thing where, you know, senior moment, no, I'll find it. Like, you don't want help. Like, it's somewhere in the house, right? Looking for it. And then after about a half an hour, I was like, hang on. I grabbed her laptop and I pulled it up.
You start like pulling up cushions where you're like, it's not under here, but let's just try.
Right. Like, I was in the bathroom and I went downstairs and then, like, you're trying to retrace your steps and things like that. As opposed to someone like me whose phone is like permanently attached to either my hand or my pocket. And I don't, you know, knock on wood, I haven't lost the phone in a very, very long time. But sure enough, her phone was in the car out front. She didn't even think to look there. She thought it was somewhere in the house. Right. So Find My helped to do that. Having it here on the Android network is great and on the operating system. But to me, the real kind of piece of it is that it's one thing to be able to find your device because Google's had that. Android's had that ability to locate a device. Like if you've had a phone, you can go into a web browser and locate that phone if you lost it, right? That was something that already existed. But it's this expanded, crowdsourced, driven by Bluetooth network that enables so much more functionality to it. And then the little devices that are going to be rolled out by the partner companies so that you can tag non-Android things to make them part of that network that really makes it that much more robust and that much more powerful.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't have time to get into it fully, but there's a lot to being done to protect that location. Because when you say location and tracking, people freak the F out. Yep. So you should know its location is end-to-end encrypted. Unless you tell people, please find this device, they will not be able to go find that location unless you approve it to be pushed out to the network. All the stuff that is being passed around from Bluetooth to Bluetooth is anonymous and encrypted, and it's only ever revealed to other devices if you want it to be revealed in order to find something. And there's even three settings, right? I don't know if you got into that yet, but there's a default setting that's kind of in the middle, but you can do a more private setting or a less private setting that improves the accuracy.
Yeah. And those options are what's needed. And then the whole thing with Apple goes back to the idea of unwanted trackers in that you're able to identify, is someone tracking, is someone attempting to track you that you don't want and stop that from happening, right? Which is that level of protection, which I think any sort of location tracking needs. And Google's taking the right step in that this should be uniform across all the technology. This should be a protocol that we're all using.
Yeah. So. Now, it's worth looking into if you're concerned about it, but you can pass along information. Bluetooth's always passing along information. We're always pinging things and he's like, no, I'm not your headphones, go away. So it's just using that same, it's using that same information passing around to go, oh, wait, you want to find a thing? Well, let me see if I have that in my database. So,
well, the number of times I walk through New York City and my Wi-Fi picks up office jet printers.
Yeah, right.
From mid-buildings. So similar. Right?
Yeah. All right, let's check out the mailbag.
This one comes in from Brandon, weighing in our conversation with Chris Ashley yesterday about EVs. Who are they good for? Brandon says, I was selling a gas-powered vehicle not too long ago, and the gentleman who bought it showed up with his partner in an EV. They bought my car, and then he asked me, where's a good place to charge? He was not in a Tesla, so I said, I don't know, and said sometimes Walgreens down the street has some chargers working. The Target had Tesla chargers. His partner drove home to San Francisco. He had to hunt for a charger and charge for the next few hours. I'm near Santa Cruz, about 200 miles away. So stories like that are probably a big reason people prefer a hybrid over full EVs at this point. In the Bay Area, this is Brandon talking about the Bay Area in California, at least, it is very common to run into Santa Cruz for the day on a weekend, or vice versa. I took my family to the San Francisco Zoo. If I had an EV, I couldn't do it on one charge for most EVs.
Can I tell you, this hit home for me because I was recently in Dallas, Texas for the Texas Pinball Festival a couple weeks ago, and I rented a car from Budget, and it was one of those things where I paid less for like a mystery vehicle. Like you didn't know what car you got, and I ended up getting...
I didn't realize they do that.
I was like, I'll roll the dice. What do I care? And I ended up getting a Hyundai Ioniq, like the EV one, right? Really nice car. Yeah. I have never been more stressed out over a weekend than I was with this car because it felt like worrying about your cell phone running out of battery and when you're going to be able to plug in a charge times 10 because like I drove from the airport to the hotel and then I drove out to a barbecue place and it's giving me my range, but I'm in a strange town. I don't know I don't know. There was no instruction from the rental place on how to charge it or where any of this sort of stuff. And I'm like, I'm one of us, right? We're tech people. Like this shouldn't be a problem. I was so stressed out.
Yeah.
Well, it's outside the comfort zone, right? I mean, that's a big part of it. Like, even if you are like, okay, I've identified where to charge, you're like, I'm not in my, you know, I'm not in my routine.
Yeah, exactly. It's routines will become normal and this won't be a big a deal. Infrastructure has to be developed for that to happen. And I already can hear a couple of EV drivers out there saying, well, hold on, let me explain. Like, yeah, it feels that way, but this is why, blah, 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 blah. So please, I invite you, send those along. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com.
I really want, there's that town, is it Nebraska? Somewhere in the Midwest that's repaving their roads with charging plates in the road.
Yeah,
so while you drive, you're charging. Like, that's where we need to get to. Like,
And solar and roads and ambient charging for cars. Can you imagine? That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Ron Richards, besides wanting to charge your car as you drive across the state of Nebraska, let folks know where they can keep up with you when you're not on DTNS with us.
For sure, yeah. So when I'm out on social media, I'm at RonXO across all the various platforms. I'm most active on Instagram. You can find me posting, you know, when I go to concerts and food I eat and movies and things like that. But please do, if you listen to the show, you're probably aware of Android Faithful, the podcast that I do with Wintut Dao, Michelle Rahman, and Jason Howell. We broadcast on the same channels as DTNS every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. If it's everything you need for Android, it's all there. We just launched shirts. We're doing cool stuff, so check out Android Faithful. And as I mentioned earlier, I work with Jay Adelson on a company called Scorbit, which is all about pinball. So if you're into pinball, download the Scorbit app. We actually just released an app update yesterday for both iOS and Android. We've got a new feature where you can see get an interactive visualization of your pinball score. You can see how quickly you got to that score. How, if you're curious how somebody got such a high score, you can see what, you know, kind of modes they play and things like that. If you're into pinball, please check it out. Just Google Scorbit. We'll come up. Check it out. Email me any feedback. But thank you, everybody. And thank you guys for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Of course. I'm happy that Scorbit is still kicking and doing well. It's awesome.
Oh, more to come. Yeah. This is going to be a busy year for Scorbit. That's right. I was in an hour-long meeting with Jay earlier today. We got lots of plans coming. So.
That's great. patrons, stick around for the extended show. Good Day Internet. WordPress owner Automatic, as you heard in the quick hits, has been on a tear buying companies that maybe didn't seem like fact that we're going to be thriving anywhere else. So what do we think of them purchasing Beeper? We're going to talk about that with Ron. Stick around.
We are. But just a reminder, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Scott Johnson's going to join us tomorrow discussing next-gen Xbox hardware. Talk to you then.
The DTNS family of podcasts. Helping each other understand.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.